Hey there, welcome to the Faces of Marketing podcast, where we talk about the human stories and lives of different people, perspectives in the marketing profession, and movement makers. This is your host, Ryan Buchanan, and I'm here with my friend, Augusto Carnero, who is founder and owner of Nossa Familia Coffee, which is Oregon's first B Corp coffee roaster. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. Good to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So not that I have to do a bunch of research because we've known each other through entrepreneurial circles and stuff like that, but we both have a bunch of things in common. Both entrepreneurs, both cyclists who were almost every day bike to work.
Aspire to.
Yeah. Both played varsity tennis in high school, although I just admitted before the interview that I think you're way better than me.
We can settle that later.
And we both have this... maybe like almost overly social and never met a person we didn't like kind of attitude, which I think draws me to you. So we're gonna have this interview and not spend all of the time trying to find where we're different, but we each have our own stories, and so we're gonna learn about your story a little bit more in this. Cool. So as always in this podcast, we start at the beginning, and so you grew up in Rio de Janeiro, right?
Yeah, in Brazil. Yeah.
And I kind of want to get a sense of, you and I haven't had this conversation before, which is why I love this forcing function. So you grew up in this big city in Brazil, and then you had, was it like an aunt or uncle, or like parts of your family had farms, like coffee plantation farms? Was it like an hour or two drive?
Oh, almost a full day. Seven hours. Yeah.
So tell me about about growing up in the big city, maybe, you know, visiting family in the, you know, in this day trip to get there, and like what it was like to grow up in Brazil.
Sure. Well, it was normal because that was my normal. That's all I knew. But my dad was an electrical engineering professor, and we lived in a suburb of Rio, about 30 minutes from the beach. And we would spend most of the year there. And the farm was in the border of the state of Minas. And it was about a 7.5 hour drive with traffic and sometimes with some dirt roads along the way. It was more like 8.5 hours. Four of us piled in the back of a station wagon. I'm the second of four. And the farm was magical. I would have dreams that I had arrived at the farm. My mom is the oldest of 10 kids. So my grandpa Ernesto, we have a coffee named Ernest after him. They had 10 kids, and so when we get to this farmhouse, big farmhouse, huge yard, I was one out of 27 cousins. So it was like going to camp. So, yeah, growing up was awesome.
That sounds cool. And so did your mom and her brothers and sisters own the farm, or where in the family did it reside?
Got it. So my grandpa owns the farm, operates it. He's 93. He's announced that he's only going to retire when he drops dead. And so he's been an awesome example of hard work and morals and ethics and maybe not so much an example of ability to let go of things. But I'm trying to learn all the good stuff from him. So interestingly, it was five women and five boys, and all the boys in the family, all my uncles work as farmers, and the ladies, one of them still works as a farmer at another farm. But my growing up in Rio was very just normal. My dad was almost boring compared to some of the people that you've interviewed here before, which, you know, I'm fortunate for. I was, overscheduled kid. I did swimming, and a couple years I did English classes, and then I was super skinny and not very self-confident, so my mom put me in judo so I could, you know, defend myself, and then eventually did jiu-jitsu, and that became more cool in Brazil. And
and siblings, like brothers and sisters? Okay, yeah.
So I'm the second of four, so my sister's 4 years older than me, and we're super close, even though we're far apart geographically. So my sister lives now in Vancouver, BC, and she has literally a sister coffee business that she owns and operates. And that's doing coffee abroad was actually her original idea, something we can talk about later. And then,
but you guys, like, there's good blood there. It's not like,
that's great. Yeah, we totally collaborate. We were business partners for a little bit, but total collaboration. And I don't know, my parents did something right, because I feel like me and my siblings, well, maybe that's a little bit high ego, but we have different measures, but very successful overall in life as far as what we're doing and level of happiness. So my sister has two kids, this business that's starting to thrive. My sister, younger than me, she's the BBC reporter in Rio. So you might hear
that's
her on
badass.
NPR. Yeah, like especially with all the election stuff in Brazil, like Julia Carneiro reporting from Rio.
We can talk about that. What's going on there? Why are they looking at our presidency as some model to shape, like,
okay, so yeah, so that's a huge thing. We need 2 hours. Yeah. I'll give you the short version. To me, and this is my politics will clearly come out, Brazilians electing a Trump-like figure is way more justifiable than when we did it here, because Brazil is in close to ruins right now. So it's been the current party that was in power was doing okay for 8 years, but the last 8 years have been horrible. Crime is up,
corruption.
I mean, the ex-president is in jail, so there's much more reason to hate. And to hate's a strong word, but to be really displeased.
Put up walls.
Yeah, well, just to be displeased with the current system and to think another 4 years of the same party is not going to solve it. Whereas it didn't feel like things were very broken here. Anyway, so that's the only difference I can point to. But, it's a democracy, and that's who people elected.
So I tell people this in conversations all the time, and they have a hard time believing, but because news creates such anxiety since the end of 2016, I literally get most of my news from conversations with friends. So that right there is super helpful to get a context for what's going on in Brazil.
I had this conversation 2 days ago with a group where I feel like I had to protect myself, because where I add value to myself and where I need to be is I need, we have a team of 40 people, and I need to be have energy to be a leader and show up, positively. And I have 3 kids, and I have to be, I have to have energy, positive energy for me and my family and my business. And I had to turn off the news because it just was not adding. And so I had this internal conversation, like, am I going to be a bad, misinformed citizen? The reality is we hear news. News comes to us.
Yeah. And being in some measure in marketing, and through social media, it's almost impossible to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me bring you back. So we're talking about.
Thank you.
My sister, she's a journalist for BBC in Rio. Yep. She's awesome. And then my younger brother is an investment banker, and he works with the Carlyle Group in São Paulo. And at one point, my sister
are legit.
Yeah, and at one point, my parents were upset because I'm here in Portland. My sister's in Vancouver, BC, older sister. My brother was getting his MBA at Wharton, and my sister was doing a year and a half away in Germany. So we were spread around the globe.
So your parents seem like they imparted this global citizen in each of you. What's mom and dad? What are they like?
Yeah. So, my dad is, is an electrical engineering professor. I mean, it takes a certain personality to do that. And he's, very stable, and I wouldn't call it over creatively, but super supportive. And the amazing thing he was able to do for our family is he took us all to Canada for his sabbatical. So he got invited to teach at the University of British Columbia. I arrived there when I was 10 years old. I remember the flight was on my birthday. I got a little birthday cake. But my first day in class in Canada, I was prepared with 3 things I knew how to say in English. I don't speak English. Can I have some water? Can I go to the bathroom? And so we lived there for 2 years. By the end, we were all fluent in English. I was a pretty good skier. And this huge horizon had opened up. Other memories at that time, like going to see snow for the first time as a 10-year-old, was so awesome.
That is cool. That's really cool. So my interview right before this, a couple days ago, was with a friend, Lou Raja, who grew up in the Congo. And when I asked this question, he made it clear to me for good reason that this is a very American question. And that is that when you were 10, maybe you were 8, and an adult asked you, what did you want to be when you grew up? What was your immediate response?
Huh. Did he say that because people in his country didn't get asked?
Right, because the assumption in that question is one of a ton of privilege. So, like, he's like, all of my friends and I, like, we're just trying to, like, you know,
survive
and, yeah, and eat mangoes and, like, you know, and thinking in the present. And so the assumption that we're, you know, we're going to be somewhere at 40 years old, like, yeah, what's that all about? You know,
so I don't recall. I can tell you what I didn't think I was going to be. Like, I never thought I was going to be a business owner, because I grew up in this home where my mother was a stay-at-home mom, very supportive, and my dad just had the 8 to 5 or 9 to 6 or 9 to 7 p.m. Like, he worked hard, but it was a professorship and it was very stable. One of his brothers was an entrepreneur, and he, you know, had a, he was a, the cool uncle. But I never thought, we didn't have this, I didn't have any close people to me that embodied entrepreneurship or business. So I thought I was going to do either something academic or maybe work at the farm, because I loved the farm. We had so much fun there.
That's cool. That's cool. So you weren't really clear. Like, some people are really
no
clear. Okay.
No. And I mean, I, you know, I think now I know what I want to do when I grow up. But I mean, I went to engineering school, right? So I clearly didn't even know when I was, you know, in college age.
Yeah. So that's a good segue. We, so you're in high school in Rio, and did you study kind of on an engineering path, or how, what was that whole decision? There's probably an expectation from your parents to go to college.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. So like, what was that like? And I always preface this with, like, I'm in it right now with my daughter. I think our kids are pretty similar ages. So
a little bit younger on my side.
Okay. So I have a 16 and 13 year old, and my 16 year old, we're looking at colleges, and it's like, it's kind of scary, but it's also, there's so much choice and all this stuff. So I just wonder, what was it like for you? And then also as a dad, like, what do you think you're going to impart on your kids?
Yeah. So, I'm a third generation college graduate. So in our family, it's going to be like, the first person that doesn't choose to go, doesn't go to college, will be like, well, you're the first not to go to college. So we have this pretty long tradition where I grew up, like, education only ends when you're done with college. It wasn't even, didn't even occur to me that you could go through life without going to college. That's the upbringing when your dad's a professor. We went back to Canada for another year in high school, and that solidified my desire to live abroad, travel abroad. And I started playing tennis when I was 12, and I really got better in high school. And two people that I knew in Rio were getting scholarships to study abroad. I'm like, I wanna do that. I wanna go party in the U.S., get a good degree, and like, play tennis in college. That sounds good. So, and that was probably one of the first examples of something really entrepreneurial that I did. I found a book. This is 95, 96, before the internets. And I got a book that had 2,000 addresses of tennis programs. And I picked 120. My dad knew some of the university names. So, and I wrote a letter, printed it 120 times, and sent it to all over the U.S., including Hawaii, and got about 40 responses back. And three of them were better, and one of them that was better was from the University of Portland. So, like, I could have ended up anywhere in the United States. So I'm kind of came to Portland by fate.
Yeah. Wow, that's really random.
Yeah. And then as far as what to study in college, I really loved tennis and exercise and sports. So I thought about physiotherapy or even like becoming like a PE teacher. And my parents never said like, no way, you shall not do that. But they're like, I know you love sports, but why don't you, you know, you can keep those as a hobby. How are you going to make a living doing that? Why don't you, you know, maybe be a doctor, engineer, you know, you like math, and keep those things as a hobby.
So did you get an engineering degree to make your dad happy?
No. I saw the practicality in it as well. I think the reality in Brazil was, yes, if you're going to study PE or physical therapy, they were not very well-paying jobs. And I didn't have anybody close to my family immediately as a role model doing those things and doing them well, whereas engineering was easier to see. I did somehow enjoy physics and I did okay in math.
And you were good at it, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, this is if I can do this, then I can get through engineering school.
Cool. So you go to University of Portland. Were there any moments in high school or maybe it was that moment that you flew solo and created a whole new life in Portland away from your family. What was that moment that either gave you confidence or was just a really, really hard challenge that you overcame in high school or college?
Boy, okay. I think things like that build on themselves, right? So I have a clear memory of just walking up the stairs when I'm 10 years old and I'm going to go to the classroom by myself and I don't speak any English. And the bell rings and all these kids are running. And I started crying. Like I was 10, I was like in a new country. And so I went back to find my mom.
Canadians are so mean.
Oh, they're rough, eh? And so I found my mom and she, held my hands and walked me up to the classroom. And, eventually I made friends and that was okay. So there's little things like that. I remember not being very, very confident in high school, which I guess most of us aren't. But I had a longer-term girlfriend when I was 15. And all of a sudden having somebody like as a teenager, I'm like, oh, this person really likes me. That gives you some confidence. And I in the high school years, I don't and then going back to Canada, I think it was cool. I remembered the city. It was more familiar. I remembered most of my English still. And then playing sports, I think, definitely helps. Even though I probably lost more than I won, it's still, you have to be, you kind of develop resiliency. It's a little bit of a muscle, I think. And in college, the growth came from, I think, trying new things. And I'm not talking about, the party things. I'm talking about like, University of Portland is a Catholic school. And I met a couple really awesome priests. And one of them had been an exchange student when he was in Brazil, when he was 16. And he was, in his 40s. And Father Mike Delaney, he eventually was the priest that presided over our wedding. His huge word was community. And he would, any conversation you had with him, he would talk about community. He had an open door policy until 2 a.m. He would hold poker tournaments. And so being around people that are just awesome with people and have this big heart, and he was like pretty, and he would love planting seeds. Like, hey, you'd make a really good resident assistant. You'd make a really good leader. And so I decided, I'd
like him.
Yeah. And so I became a resident assistant. So then all of a sudden you're trying to lead your peers. And, so it's a building thing.
I normally don't ever ask this question, but was faith part of why you chose to go to University of Portland?
Absolutely not. I'm not high on details, and so it's amazing that I survived engineering school. I arrived at UP thinking that I was going to have to learn how to love American football and baseball. Here I arrive at an awesome soccer school, right? There's not even a football team.
And they're pretty good at basketball, too.
Yeah. And I didn't even know it was a Catholic school. Like, I didn't even look at that detail. I did marry an awesome Catholic girl, Carissa, and spirituality was, it's a good time in life to experience or explore spirituality.
That's awesome. Cool. Okay, so now we're getting a little bit to the origin story of Nossa Familia, mm-hmm. Which really kind of preface, I'd love for you to preface the whole chapter where you went to be an engineer somewhere. I forgot where you went. And you're like, there's something more creative out there for me. And I'm kind of generalizing here. So fill in all the gaps.
Yeah. Engineering was a good initial career. This going from, a couple hundred dollars a month budget in college to, maybe $40,000 a year salary back then to start. It's like, whoa, I'm rich. So it was a good base, but more and more I'd wake up and not know what the heck I was doing or why I was getting out of bed to go do this thing that I wasn't very good at it, so it didn't bring me joy. And then I didn't get that positive feedback of doing a good job. It was more of a struggle. The awesome part of that job also was I got an opportunity to travel to England. So they needed young engineers to go to England. So we had a 3-month-old daughter, and Carissa is awesome. She's like, okay, let's go to England. So we lived there for a year. And then when I was negotiating my position back in Portland was when I really am like, it was another transition period. And I was really thinking, I can't do this for much longer. Well, you know, is it the company? Should I apply for another company? I started working on my engineering resume, but as I was typing it, I felt like I was typing a lie. I'm like, no, like, it's not about the company. It's like, I don't want to do this. So then going back to Brazil, my sister had already had this idea. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to import coffee. At first, I thought she was crazy. Because, you know, my family just saw themselves as farmers. You produce the green beans and then you sell it. And then who knows what happens with it afterwards. But going back to Brazil, one of my cousins had started an export company and he had started a roastery at the farm. So actually my dad played a role in it because he's like, oh, let's go have dinner with Gabriel. And he was like super supportive, like, why don't you take a box of coffee to Portland? So the birth of Nossa Familia was on the way back from England. I brought a box of 70 pounds of roasted coffee. This was the beginning of 2004. And I gave some away to neighbors and sold some. It was really weird for me to accept money because my family had to just always give, you know, we roast a little bit of coffee at the farm and give some away. And I wasn't a business person. So it was really weird for me to accept money in the beginning. But really, there was a push factor from engineering. And I just needed something different. I loved Brazil. And I tell people if my family had been planting cacao, you know, we'd be talking about chocolate right now. So it really was about the family connection. And then I can go back all the way to being about 8 years old at the farm. My grandpa would wake me up at 5:30 a.m., you know, like, get up, let's go. And I would have lunch with him and my uncles at the table. It was like their daily huddle meeting at 6:30 and get dressed up pretty warm because we're up at about 3,000 feet. Put wool gloves on, and I'd go horseback riding with the cowboys because we also did potatoes and cattle at the farm. And I remember the sun is rising. It's like one of those cold fall mornings here. There's like mist over a lake next to me. And it's like so beautiful that even like as an 8-year-old, I think I recognized how beautiful and privileged that was. And I'd be like, oh man, I want to get a bus and I want to bring all my friends from Rio to come see this and like ride horses. And I think part of Nossa Familia, that's like, I want to bring everybody to Brazil and to Guatemala and to these other places that we buy coffee from for people to experience that.
Yeah, I mean, as you're describing that, my head was going exactly there. And I'll ask the question, but I want to frame it first. For me, family is everything. I'm really lucky to have both my parents are entrepreneurs, really tight with my two older sisters. And our extended family gets together at least once or twice a year. And our tradition is going to Black Butte Ranch in Central Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so, like you, there's all these amazing memories. It's this beautiful place in the middle of the Cascade Mountains. And I want to share that experience, not just metaphorically, but also literally mm-hmm. with my employees in that space. And so we do a 2.5-day retreat there every year. And it's this like amazing time of not only hikes and golf and all of that, but also like Jimmy Fallon inspired lip syncing contests and all kinds of like creative music stuff. So I with that, I mean, you have a 40-person company.
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you ever like every other year or anything like that where you say, hey, come to Brazil with me and really experience the essence of the brand of mm-hmm. of Nossa Familia and why I started this thing. Has that ever come up?
Yes. So I can't take 40 people to Brazil. We started doing coffee tours. And so I've done 6 tours in Brazil. For a while, I was calling. I actually bought the domain name mountainbikebrazil.com because I wanted to do coffee mountain biking.
Cool.
Yeah. And then what happened in 2012, we bought a tiny bit of coffee from Guatemala because my roaster had visited and helped a mill with their process to improve the quality of the coffee. And then we got invited to go And we met some other people from Guatemala, and then we decided to put together a trip for 10 people where we took five, me plus four other employees, and then we took five of our bigger wholesale customers. And it was an awesome trip. And so this year in January, we're doing the fourth iteration. And we do two trips back to back. We do one that we advertise on our website, and it's for anybody, any customer, and it's $1,500 plus your airfare, and it's an amazing, authentic week where we have lunch with the farmers, we harvest coffee, we taste a bunch of coffee, we do some beautiful hikes.
No showering, right?
No, they're showering. Okay. It's not right. It's not a posh tour, so I would specifically say this is not a 4 or 5 star tour. This is an authentic travel experience. It's like we stay in clean places, but it's like accommodations are 2 to 4 stars maximum, usually 2 to 3 stars. Because we... If you want a posh tour,
you're
just go.
You're mountain biking. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. Like, you want
to
stink.
Yeah. Anyway, and the trip to Guatemala so far is no mountain biking. I had to drop the mountain biking because I'm like, okay, I'm not a bike company. I'm a coffee company. Though last year I did do a Nicaragua coffee mountain bike trip.
I'm so bummed I missed that.
Yeah. So this year we're taking 5 staff members. And actually this morning I got to make 3 people really happy because I told them they got to go. And I got to make 2 other staff members less happy because I'm like, we can't take it this year. But you're high on the list for next year. So and one of our goals, because I'm not a very focused person, is to go from being a coffee importer, roaster, retailer to also have a travel branch of the company.
That's cool. So I didn't allow you to go through the whole linear movement of through the origin story of Nosa Familia and kind of like give us a sense of where the company is now, just so if folks haven't heard of Nosa Familia, like most people around Portland have heard of you. And is it bigger than Portland? You have a couple cafes, you sell the product through other, you know, like give us a sense of the scale.
Cool. I'll start with the beginning because this is always fun for me to think about. When I registered the company in 2004, I invited a colleague from college to become my business partner, and we each invested $400 to pay for like $700 of coffee coming in and then $100 for the business license. So it's just crazy to think that we've come so far. A year and a half in, I quit my job and my dad got nervous. You know, he's like, don't you want to keep that as a hobby? And I'm like, nope, I'm doing this. And my wife went back to school to support the family. So she, not back to school, sorry, back to work. She's a nurse. Now she's a nurse midwife. And so she, you know, for a year and a half, she supported the family, paid all the bills. It took me 3 years to take my first paycheck. You know, starting a business is no joke. Now we're a team of 40 people. The last year has been crazy. We had to move our whole roasting operations to bigger space and buy a new roaster, bigger roaster. And with that, we had to relocate. So we had to open a new cafe. And we opened 3 more cafes. So we have 4 retail locations. 3 here in Portland and 1 down in LA.
That's awesome. So in the early days, it's often where shit hits the fan and is the roller coaster ride tends to be really steep up and down in those moments. What would you say one of your biggest challenges to overcome? Was it ownership with a co-founder and working through that? Was it not paid by a major customer for 4 months and you ran out of cash? And like, give us a sense of 1 or 2 big challenges.
Okay. So the first one, which I think is the more meaningful one, is simply like personal growth. So I just felt inept. I had no clue what I was doing. And so I had to, it took me a while. My ex-business partner had studied business. And so I was leaning on him a lot to be the business mind. Eventually when our partnership wasn't going so well, and Jason and I are still friends, we did things amicably because like, you know, I like getting along with people and Jason does as well. But once it became clear that like I needed to be a leader and I couldn't just rely on other people, I had to own this, like literally and metaphorically own it. So that was a big, and there's a lot of roller coasters getting to that point where you have to, you know, break up a partnership. Those are not easy discussions, not an easy process. Yeah, there's a time when we had a container of coffee in the water, and so I was going to owe my cousins that owned export company, I was going to owe them $80,000, and the bank pulled our line of credit. And so
Wait, it fell off the ship?
No. The coffee's in the water means it's shipping. Like the ship, the boat, it's on the way.
Okay.
That's a term. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad I asked because I was thinking like, no, the ship like sunk.
I know there's insurance for that as well. No, so the coffee is in the ship, coming over, and the bank pulls my line of credit. So like, I have to call my family saying I'm not going to have $80,000 to pay them. And what I found, and I imagine you found some of this as well, like many of these situations lead to growth, and sometimes to opportunity. So when that happened, I like operating with transparency and win-win in mind. So I called my cousin, explained what had happened. They asked for more details, and then they came up with terms. So they started financing my coffee purchases with, you know, longer terms. So that was cool. I think I might disagree with you that the roller coaster is harder in the beginning. Like
The
scale gets bigger. And yeah. So I definitely feel like we've made it beyond a certain point. So, you know, we've been in business, for 15 years now, and it's stable. We have a team. But yeah, if shit hits the fan, it's big. And the mental roller coaster, there's more people to keep engaged and happy and yeah.
I'm just going to philosophize on this a little bit. I agree. I meditate more, or because of lived experience of having done Eroy for 16 years, the smaller things seem huge when you're first starting because
100%.
Yeah. They're new. And, you know, so I feel like the problems get bigger. But you're more aware that this is a familiar pattern with what's happened before, and that you can kind of modulate your emotions so that you're not on the ride quite as much.
I think it's the resiliency muscle, yeah. like I talked about earlier. You're right. I don't think some of the roller coaster rides that I've had recently, I couldn't have done those, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah. So you make some hard decisions, and then you survive it. And then it's like, oh, that builds confidence. And then you do more. Mm. The other part is being around other business owners. So being part of the, you know, EO Portland, I mean, you see people do amazing stuff. I'm like, well, they did it. They're normal and nice and not that different from me. Then maybe I can do it too.
Yeah. So the marketing question, and that is, so you have this gift of kind of natural business development. You know, you get along well with people, you create relationships easily. Have you relied heavily on that to fuel Nosa Familia's growth, as far as like more of the blocking and tackling of getting Grand Central Bakery to sign up with you and all that? Or is it a solid mix of marketing strategies that you use in addition to sales relationships that you do? Like what's your unique ability, and how do you apply that to marketing for your company?
I don't come from a marketing background. So the funny part is when I started the company, I found a while back, like my first, what I thought was a business plan was actually a semblance of a marketing plan. And it was me talking about all the bicycle events and bicycle promoters and bike shops that I knew. So I literally started by going to bike shops and showing up to bike races. And so that's why we're one of the sponsors of Cycle Oregon. And it's convenient because then I get to ride these events and talk about the brand. So in a nutshell, the marketing strategy for Nosa Familia is tell the story, taste the coffee. So we do loads of demos. So we have a team that goes to all the new season stores, Zupans, Market of Choice, all the good local stores. We're there weekly doing demos so people can taste the coffee. Then we're highly involved in the community as well. That's more because without thinking of marketing, it's because we want to be involved. And then that leads to, and again, it's whether it's saying yes to pretty much any donation request that comes in for auctions and all of that, to, you know, providing coffee, different charity events.
Do you look at a competitor like Stumptown Coffee that is so clear about its brand and and they've really, they've grown rapidly. They've become kind of an iconic brand in New York and other places, and almost selling the Portland brand alongside it. And try and learn from that, from a market branding and marketing strategy for Nosa Familia, or it's like they do their thing great, we're going to do ours differently, and we're just going to have different strategies.
It's more towards the second. So, you know, a little bit about Stumptown. You know, it's awesome. Awesome story. It was really hard for us when we started in 2004 and 2005. That was like the heyday, and I mean, people wouldn't even want free samples if they used Stumptown. They're like, we were with Stumptown. So it was they had something really good and still have something really good going for them. I think they really were able to capture the Portland spirit. So, you know, definitely I became more interested in looking for trends, and I realized we just needed to show up to places, and we needed to get people to taste the coffee, and needed to get to a place where we could share our story, because we are unique. There's very few people in the United States that have this authentic connection all the way back to the farm. But there's often times when, you know, there's certain, you know, there's more than 50 roasters in Portland. So it is super competitive. And every so often an employee or somebody will come and say, hey, they're doing this. Can you, you know, like, we should be doing this. I'm like, that's great that they're doing that. You know, like we need to focus on what we do well and focus on our own path. And I think every company has their own path.
Cool. So who right now are you looking to for inspiration, just as far as another entrepreneur, another, you know, where, who's influencing you right now?
Man, there's a lot. So, well, one being part of EO, you know, there's 130 of us in the group. And so within that group, there's people that I know have expertise in certain areas. So like, oh, if it's, you know, culture and team building, I'm going to go talk to, you know, Jill Nelson, you know, if it's, so there's different, if it's like, you know, backcountry skiing, I'm going to talk to you.
I'm glad that's the niche that I've carved out. That's awesome.
Or life balance, or just like leading an awesome life, right? Because it's not all about the money and the growth. It's actually very little about the money and the growth at this point. Like, well, I want to optimize the business so that it serves my life and the life of my staff and the life of our suppliers. You know, I think that's part of being a B Corp is the triple bottom line. It's people, planet, profit. So we do need to be a profitable business. So within EO, there's a lot of examples, and sometimes it's like people that are kicking ass, you know, making money. There's people that are optimizing their lives, or there are people that are focused on, you know, diversity and inclusion and just being awesome citizens. And then besides that, I listen to loads of podcasts, and I'm trying to read loads of books as well.
Tell me a little bit more about B Corp. So our friend Farhad, isn't it? There's Christian Enger with Hopworks. There's probably, I mean, Janelle Isaacs. I mean, there's
all the cool kids.
Yeah. So for me, I haven't quite joined it just because there's some like paperwork components to it that I've got to score these points on this. But I'm super aligned with the values of, you know, environmental and diversity and inclusion and other key pieces of culture and basically being intentional about leading good lives and a business with a purpose and all that.
Yeah.
But does it help from a marketing standpoint, as B Corp gotten into the consumer's mind that it matters to them?
In short, I think it does matter, and for a few reasons. So one, you don't have to be a B Corp to do all the good stuff. You're doing the good stuff already, right? And being a super responsible and awesome business owner. What the main draw for me was that we were doing a lot of scattered things. Like, I'm a generalist in my approach to life and everything. Even in the tennis court, I'm a generalist. I don't do anything super well. I do a little bit of everything pretty good. And so I'm scattered. And so we're doing some donations here. We're buying from these suppliers and paying more. We're, you know, doing this sustainability thing here. So B Corp helped us organize and make it all concise and all work together. I have an aversion to forms and paperwork, and so I was only able to go through the process when we hired the right person who was totally into sustainability, was a totally detail-oriented person, and just thrived on going through meticulously over the 200 questions and scoring all the points. So it took us a while to go through it. It's a hard process, which I like that it's hard, and we just recertified, and it was pretty much as hard as the first time. But it's good that it's hard because then it's authentic. So, you know, when you see the seal of a B Corp, like, people work hard to get it and to maintain it. And then as far as marketing, I think other B Corps quickly understand that if you are a B Corp, they know how hard you worked and they know that you are authentic. So it helps in that way. In Portland, there's some good, I don't know when the tipping point is for, you know, the U.S. or the world, but I think in Portland, we're reaching soon a tipping point where most people will know what a B Corp is. And I feel like we've gotten some customers out of it. And then as a business owner, you know, a lot of it is retaining really good customers is almost as important as getting new customers. So, you know, New Seasons is the biggest customer, and they're a B Corp as well. So we're actually about to do an awesome program with them where we're supplying coffee from young farmers in Guatemala. So it's going to be the next generation coffee. And with the donations from that project, we're going to create a fund to help so that young farmers in Guatemala can pull from that fund for loans. So it's not a donation, but they can pull for loans to buy more land, to finance their crops.
Micro-lending kind of thing?
Yeah. And Hopworks, we pulled Christian in. They're going to make a beer out of it as well.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. So vision for where Nosa Familia goes in, say, 5 or 10 years, do you stay West Coast? What's the vision for the brand?
I'm planning on a retreat in the next few months to figure that out. So we're right now in a staying position. So we just did a lot, and you know, I think I'm tired. My crew's tired. It was a lot of moving pieces. So now we're in an optimizing phase, and we need to recover cash as well because we're not getting money from outside investors.
You just bought a building, right?
Yeah, we just bought a building last year, and for that we did a partner with other investors. And that was a clear thing that, like, I had no business buying a building. I had zero saved up for it. But again, being part of Yo and around all these people that are making things happen and getting the right connections and learning from other people how they did it, it worked. And so it's, and so as far as vision, the most important thing is that we're following our values. You know, in 10 years from now, I don't know if we're going to be, you know, only a 60 person, you know, going from 40 to 60 person, as long as we're optimized and we're doing good work, that's fine. Or if we're going to be, you know, 250 people with 20 cafes, I need to do some more thinking on that. We'll definitely have coffee tours though.
Yeah, good. And just for the record, we're having our strategic leader offsite in a couple of weeks, and we've got to figure that out as well. So a lot of us haven't figured out where we're going and when we grow up.
Yeah. I recently had a discussion with somebody about, like, how a few years ago, and maybe it still is, like, when we're starting a business, people are like, well, are you starting a real business or is this going to be a lifestyle business? Whereas lifestyle business was a bad thing. And I'm like, heck yeah, it's a lifestyle business. Like, why would I build a business if it wasn't going to serve my life and the life of others around me, you know, and our staff? And yeah.
I like that. Being around a lot of tech entrepreneurs for the last 18 years, it does come off as a super negative, like, condescending piece of, like, oh, some little lifestyle company. And you're like, no, it's like purposeful, important lifestyle company. Like, yeah, it's all in how you say it, you know?
Yeah. The other one is the exit strategy. What's your exit strategy? And currently mine is to just keep having fun. Like, I think it's just starting to get fun. We're just starting to get a really solid base. And so, yeah, there's no plans.
So last question is more of the surprise factor of what the audience might not know about you, of, you know, kind of a formative moment, that's life moment that's happened, that is either that's kind of made you what you are today. Like where you knew, maybe it was when you were 10 and you know, going to Canada, living there for 2 years, not knowing English, and you're like, okay, that, because I could live through that and be strong after that, it it's not a surprise that I'm that I'm here now. Even though you didn't ever think you'd become a business owner and an entrepreneur, it's not surprising that you are where you are because you obviously have this strong family and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's like one memory that stands out to you.
Man, I'm very fortunate not to have any like huge traumatic events in my life. I'm going to have to go with the building blocks. And so taking that step of like, I'm going to send 120 letters out and I'm going to go site. Like I didn't get, like you're doing with your daughter, I didn't tour colleges. I actually had to go against my dad because I got approved to go to, you know, I passed this really hard exam to go to engineering school in his, in the department that he taught at, you know, not engine, not electrical. So he was not happy that then, you know, it was costing money and they helped me with my college education. So, but making that decision and just getting off an airplane and going, and then like, being a Division I school, which was super hard, and I was like working super hard, injuring, beating up my body to try to make it to the travel squad, and then eventually seeing that that was not it, and becoming an RA, you know, trying to become, you know, becoming a leader within the students where I could have just been partying, you know, saying yes, take me to, let's go to England, let's go try. So I don't know. I think it's building blocks.
Building blocks is a original, unique answer. I have not had that on the podcast yet, so
I'll take it.
Yes, be proud of that. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Augusto. It's just awesome hanging out and getting to know your story that much better.
Fun conversation.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.